Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 73, and we're, of course, wrapping up the 2016 season, which came to a close in Foxborough with the Steelers losing to the Patriots. And now our attention turns to what happens with the Steelers' own free agents, what happens in the bigger picture of free agency, and then, of course, to the draft, which, believe it or not, is still 3 months away. We'll have Alex Kirby join us on the show today. Alex is an author who's written a bunch of books. His most recent one's about Belichick and his philosophies and his thoughts on strategy and tactics. So he'll be with us about 30 minutes in here, and we'll have him for the second half of the podcast. But Dave, now the other side, the 9 months that isn't the football season is upon us, and you know, we're deep in it.
Yes, we are, and the Steelers are already deep into it as well, too, signing already three of their exclusive rights free agents, wide receiver Kobe Hamilton, fullback Roosevelt Nix, and Jordan Dangerfield, safety. So that should not come as a surprise to anybody. Exclusive rights free agents are those kind of free agents that have less than three accrued seasons underneath their belts, and generally those kind of players are, you know, players that are past future signing players that you know, managed to stick on a 53-man roster, or former draft picks that signed, went to the practice squad and re-signed types of things. So the Steelers, believe it or not, have a large group of exclusive rights free agents this year, and all but a few of them will likely be re-signed. And you know, we already hit the three of them there already. B.J. Finney's another higher profile one. And perhaps the highest profile one on the list is Alejandro Villanueva.
Right, and Alejandro Villanueva, of course, the situation with some of these guys like an Anthony Ciccolo, even though he was drafted, and just so we get the technical aspects of this out of the way, because I'm sure for a lot of people they don't know all the details. You know, you draft a guy, you have his rights for 4 years, unless he's a first rounder, you have 4 years of his rights, and then you have an option on season number five. Even though Ciccolo was drafted, he was cut by the Steelers last year at the cut down to 53. So that then invalidates that contract. He comes back, and then he works on a different type of contract. Did he and Doran Grant both sign two-year deals, Dave? Is that what originally happened?
Oh, let's see what happened. They were cut, and then Ciccolo, two-year deals after that because
right.
then Anthony Ciccolo just finished his second year of that deal.
Yeah, and so for Ciccolo, he's an exclusive rights free agent, even though he was a sixth-round draft pick that year. A variety of other guys are going to go through this. Ross Cockrell's in his third year, so he's a slightly different situation, Dave. And Chris Boswell, is an exclusive rights free agent, right? He signed a two-year deal. This was year two, right?
Yeah,
is that not the situation with him as well?
Yeah, that would be the case with Boswell. We'll run through them real quick. Fitzgerald Toussaint, Roosevelt Nix, Chris Boswell, Alejandro Villanueva, Xavier Grimble, Anthony Ciccolo, Kobe Hamilton, B.J. Finney, Jordan Dangerfield, Cole Manhart, Valerian Ume Ezeoki, and Kevin Anderson. Now, the last two, Ezeoki and Kevin Anderson, were guys that were training camp bodies, got injured, and then were placed on IR where they spent the remainder of the season. There's a good chance both those guys won't be re-signed, even though they're exclusive rights free agents. Cole Manhart, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I think he ended the season on the practice squad injured list. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Everybody else that I just named, though, should be re-signed as exclusive rights free agents.
Okay, and then what Cockrell's situation in year three is what?
He is a restricted free agent, and it's going to be interesting to watch. Him and Chris Hubbard are the only two restricted free agents the Steelers have, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Cockrell. I mean, let's face it, this guy is a starter. He's played, you know, played some good football for the Steelers over the last couple of the seasons. The thing with him is, do you put an original round tender on him? And I've seen some confusion on this, you know, being as how he came to the Steelers via – you know, after being cut by the Bills, does the original round with him stick or does it not? I have yet to research that. I've seen some people say that, yeah, it does stick. And if that if that indeed is the case, well, then it would make probably sense to put an original round tender on him, knowing that if he is signed away, you would get, you know, what was he, a fourth-round draft pick?
He was a fourth-round pick, yeah.
You would get a fourth-round draft pick as compensation. Now, you can probably avoid all that by giving him a second-round tender because, let's face it, there's not going to be a team willing to give up a second-round draft pick to sign Ross Cockrell away. So I'll have to look a little bit deeper into what the CBA says about that. Chris Hubbard, I would expect him to probably receive an original round tender, and those amounts are not known yet, but I think the speculation is that's going to come in around about $1.9 million or so, right around in there. So Ross Cockrell, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him as it relates to what level of restricted tender he receives.
Okay, so that's what's going to take place here in the early going. Well, you know, over the next couple of weeks, I wouldn't expect any contracts to get negotiated. That stuff will go further down the line. And Dave's got a whole write-up on all the guys who are free agents for the Steelers. We've, of course, discussed a bunch of them. And we'll get into that as kind of the off-season moves on a little bit here. Dave, you know, I guess as you mentioned, the most interesting guy of all of these is Ali Villanueva because, you know, look, this is a guy he is not your typical football player. He's like, I was just reading something on Urschel. Is it John Urschel, the former Penn State lineman who was a double major and he's getting his PhD in applied mathematics. He's up at MIT studying this summer, this offseason. I just saw a tweet that said, hey, don't be surprised if you see John Urschel in town. Ali Villanueva is a different cat as well. He's been playing for the Steelers, and obviously in the offseason, he's been working toward getting his MBA at Tepper, the business school at Carnegie Mellon, very well-respected business school. And he has talked at various times about, you know, thinking about his career and making money after football. Now, Ali Villanueva is a left tackle in the NFL who's 6'9 and 340 pounds now. Those are rare breeds of individuals. And with the progress he made this year, he can put himself up potentially over the next 5 or 7 years if he were to continue to develop. Remember, he's not a kid. He's 27, 28 years old, I think, because he started late. But, you know, he can make, you know, millions, literally millions of dollars playing football. But he's a unique situation, Dave. And so, how do you expect the Steelers to approach this? And is he a guy that you'd be interested in signing to a 3-year contract right now and kind of locking him up?
Yeah, you know, he is a very interesting situation because the Steelers don't normally give contracts to exclusive rights free agents, and normally they don't have more than just a handful of them anyway, and usually none really in the situation that Villanueva is. And let's face it, starting left tackles and big ones at that don't grow on trees. So yes, they could just there's several paths they could take. They could just let him sign a 1-year exclusive rights tender and then let him play out the season. He would then be a restricted free agent in 2018. Then you slap him with a second round level restricted tender and you keep him on the cheap again for 2018. Or you could look at him and say, hey, you know, maybe we want him a little bit beyond that. Maybe he deserves to be paid a little bit more. Maybe that would entice him to hold off on his post-football career. So, you know, you perhaps, it's definitely worth maybe writing about and talking about as we're doing now and further on into the offseason. Do you sign him to a 3 or 4 year contract that maybe pays him, I don't know, what, $3-4 million a season? That's still a hell of a bargain if you expect him to be your starter. And let's face it, over the second half of the 2016 season, Alejandro Villanueva could be in the talk of being a top, 13.
It's a top third of the league.
Yeah, you know, top third of the league left tackle, and one would expect him to only improve moving forward. So absolutely no guarantee that the Steelers will sign him. Look, you could do the same thing next year with him as well, too. You could tender him a restricted free agent contract after he signs it. Then you extend him during the offseason. So very unlikely to happen this offseason, but I wouldn't rule it out completely.
Okay, so that's where that situation is. Dave, you know, we promised that we would get to a bunch of emails, and, you know, in our limited kind of 20 minutes that we have to do this before we get to Alex, we should do that. This is something that we've gotten more and more emails as our listenership has grown, and we're getting great downloads and feedbacks. And I try to get back to these as much as I can, but we will try to have a regular feature here in the off season. We're either on Wednesdays or Fridays. We spend at least 20 minutes, taking emails. If you would put something in the headline of your email, put the name Terrible Top Podcast along with the topic, put Terrible Podcast / something so that it's easy for us to identify these and sort them out so that we can, you know, make a good process of this, that would be helpful. So, Dave, we've got months of backload, so let's kind of take the backload. I'll take it from just pre-Super Bowl, the pre-Patriots game type of stuff, and you take it from the other end and the stuff we got today when you asked for some emails last night. Why don't you kick us off with something?
Did you just tell me to take it from the other end?
Take it from the other end.
All right, I'll take it from the other end. This one's from Bill Weaver. I've been thinking about in jest his ideas to find a bottom-dwelling team desperate right now to trade a pick for a future higher pick, a second-round pick to the Browns now for a first in 2019. Basically, what Bill is asking is, should the Steelers use kind of the futures market and trade something now for a future first-round draft pick from a team they figure might not be picking too low in the draft order with hopes of finding the Big Ben replacement, say, in 2018 or 2019. Bill, I understand your premise of what you're getting at there, but I think playing the futures market in the draft is very, very dangerous because, A, you know, so much can happen. You don't know what a lot of those draft classes are going to look like as far as the quarterback position. For all we know, Ben Roethlisberger might play 6 more years, even though his contract doesn't run that long. I think you have to live in the now, especially when you're talking about the Steelers. So the only time you make a deal, I think, is to actually move up in a draft, being as how, let's face it, this roster probably not void of many talented players that need to put them over the top. So I understand where you're getting at, Bill, but I would go against your idea of playing, quote unquote, the future first round draft pick market.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dave. It's the situation here is this is a Super Bowl caliber team, and I want to use draft picks on making this team better right now. Look, I think it's well set up for the future with the youth they now have on defense. I really actually think the Steelers are in a great position. The thing about the draft and the thing I have proposed on the quarterback situation is, as people may be aware here, is I've been a proponent of the Steelers re-signing Landry Jones. And if they did that to a 2-year deal, or even a 3-year deal with Landry Jones, you have your veteran backup. You have Zach Bettenberger for another year as a, you know, an insurance policy. And so I wouldn't draft the quarterback this year, although I do think the Steelers will draft a quarterback. Dave, we've talked about it somewhere rounds 3 through 5. I would wait another year closer to the end of Ben's career, obviously, the further we go down the timeline. And I would be drafting that quarterback next year. And maybe next year, instead of thinking rounds 3 through 5, maybe you're thinking round two, or maybe you're thinking round three, and get a higher pedigree guy or a higher ceiling guy. So I don't think that's the path the Steelers are going to follow, but that's the path I would follow in terms of approaching the quarterback situation.
Well, you know, I think depending on what happens with Landry Jones, and I fully expect Landry not to be back. So then you went out and got insurance in Zach Mettenberger ahead of the 2016 season. Will they and should they draft a quarterback again this year? I would have no problem with that. I would, however, hope that they wouldn't spend a first or second round draft pick on a quarterback. And let's face it, from what I've seen, and I haven't gotten too deep into the quarterback position or any position as far as draft prospects go just yet, because obviously covering the Steelers well into the playoffs. But from what I have seen, this is not a great quarterback class this year either. So could we see them spend a fourth or fifth round draft pick this year on a quarterback just to see what they might can get and maybe can develop? I think it's possible, but, I mean, let's face it, and I'm not buying any of this Ben Roethlisberger retirement talk. Now, obviously, if it quickly escalates into Ben saying, look, I'm not coming back, well, then you're probably going to have to do something right away then. But I would be against, really, David, spending a top three draft pick on a quarterback this year.
Okay, so, and I will tell you, you know, there are different thoughts about this quarterback class. I think because there's not a top of the draft type quarterback, I think that's what a lot of people think. The depth may be okay. I'll tell you the early reports from the Senior Bowl, the guy who's really stood out as a quarterback is Nate Peterman, the Pitt quarterback, who obviously was at Tennessee first and then transferred to Pitt and had a great season this year. And he has looked good down there. And there's, you know, I think Peterman started the season as a guy who maybe you thought he was going to be, you know, a back end of the day three pick or potentially an undrafted free agent. With the season he had, you know, he solidly put himself in the draft. And I think there are now people who are think that Peterman may be a day two guy, a second or third round guy. So something to watch. Okay, Dave, Doogie sends us an email and he asks, how do you judge the difference between a failed defense and a successful offense? And he sent this before the Patriots game. And I think that, you know, that game is a very good example of a situation where do you give the credit to the Patriots for an offensive game plan and execution that was not flawless, but very good? Or do you put it on the Steelers and say their scheme was bad and their execution was bad? How are you looking at that?
The correct answer would be yes, but that's the easy way out, right? But I mean, let's face it. If you're not getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks, I don't care what you use. Cover, you know, cover two, cover three, quarters.
Cover all of them.
Cover all of them. If you don't get pressure on Tom Brady, and I don't know if you saw some of the numbers that I tweeted, you know, not long after the game, the Steelers, you know, rushed three players, like nearly half of the dropbacks that Tom Brady had, dropping a lot of those guys in zone. It didn't matter. I mean, he had a lot of time back. I think like 11 snaps, Tom Brady had 3.18 seconds or longer to hold on to the football. When he wasn't holding on to the football, he was getting it out in like 2.56 seconds or lower, which his average ended up being less than his average during the regular season. The only thing the Steelers did good in that game was defend against the run all but one play, and that was that LeGarrette Blount going beast mode and, you know, carrying people 7 yards.
And Steeler defenders, actually, you know what's funny about those types of plays, and we see them every once in a while, you have the guys coming from the other end getting involved in a play, and they end up actually pushing the pile against their own defenders. I mean, it was just crazy. You had a mound of Steelers around LeGarrette Blount, and they're all pushing different directions. And that was part of the issue. But, yeah, I'm with you on that. Let me ask you another one related to the run game on Le'Veon Bell. Fred asked us, is there any chance Le'Veon Bell's running style negatively affects play action that the quarterback's running because it gives the defenders time to see if Ben has the ball so they don't have to react to like a one-cut type runner?
I personally, David, I don't see how that affects your play action because, look, they still have to decipher whether or not the running back, you know, if you carry out the play action fake well enough, and in my opinion, the Steelers probably didn't do enough play action. And Ben Roethlisberger has been great over his career at play action. If you look at the numbers, maybe they didn't use enough of it. I don't think the way the style of running of Le'Veon Bell's made it, you know, any better or any worse. I don't think, because people still have to decipher, does he have the football? And then they need to look and see where the heck is he, because he is so patient behind the line. If anything, maybe it plays into the favor of play action. But no, I don't think it plays a big part, his running style, into success or not non-success of play action. But that's
I generally agree with you there. But it's an interesting question. I hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about it, Fred. So appreciate that. Our buddy Bob in Canada. He asked about, and this was again before the Patriots game, and I think it's something we've discussed a little bit, but again, he asked, if the Steelers lose this game, do you consider this a successful season? And then I think the point, that the maybe more salient point, and I heard some people differ on this point, they said, would the nature, because it was pregame, would the nature of the loss impact your answer to the question?
I think regardless of the way you look at it, pre-game or post-game, I still view it as a successful season. Let's keep in mind that this was a young defense. This was a young defense that made a lot of strides in the second half of the season. If you would ask me week 7 or week 8 if I thought this team would be playing for the AFC Championship, I would have bet you a lot of David's money that that wouldn't have happened, and they made it that far. Keep in mind that the offense suffered through the play of a lot of young receivers. You know, they never got Ladarius Green, even though they got him back for what, 5 or 6 games. They never really got him on track and couldn't keep. Boy, they could have really used Ladarius Green in the playoffs, that's for sure, helping the red zone in that area. A lot of these young receivers made mistakes as well, and throughout the season. Let's face it, would guys like Kobe Hamilton even be on the 53-man roster had they had guys like Martavis Bryant or Marcus Wheaton throughout the season? Sammy Coates, obviously a big disappointment as well, too. You can't rely just on, even though they did, you can't rely completely when you get into the playoffs on just two players, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. And I thought we saw that in the playoffs, that the younger players didn't step up. And once Antonio Brown was taken away and Le'Veon Bell was injured, they really had nothing, because you missed two deep attempts down the field that could have been game-changing plays as well. Defensively, I think they're fine, David. I think they, of course, obviously need to address the outside linebacker position, a few other maybe positions on defense, fortify some depth a little bit. But I think it's okay to look at what happened both pre- and post-AFC championship game as 2016 season being a successful one.
Yeah, for me, definitely a successful season. Certainly a bad taste in how they lost to New England, but a successful season. Hey, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxen at First Advantage Mortgage. Craig, you know, is a lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native. He's a nationally recognized lender, everything you'd want him to be. He'd love the opportunity to help out our podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
I've got one from Luke Bumgardner here. This was post AFC Championship game, talking about asking, I think, in general, wants to know the differences that I may have saw between game 1 and 2 against the Patriots. And Look, here's the thing about the first game against the Patriots. Don't forget that they had Rob Gronkowski, and he had two huge catches in that game. Totaled something like, 70 yards. One of those was a touchdown that came on third down. Luke is quick to point out that he does remember a few key third down drops in that game, and he would be correct. I think Edelman had one. I think White or one of their running backs had one as well. The Steelers didn't do a great job against the run in that game. If you remember, I think LeGarrette Blount had 50% of his runs were successful runs. And what did he have? Something like 120 yards rushing in that game. And obviously, if you're not able to stop the run, it's going to hurt you in your passing game eventually. They didn't, not that I remember, get good pressure on Brady in that game either. Maybe a little bit more than they did in the second game as far as coverages go. Remember that was kind of early on in the transition to Artie Burns and Sean Davis, so I doubt they played a lot of man coverage, and I don't think they did if any, if memory serves me, in that game as well too. They just simply got their butts beat down the field in both those games. Gave up explosive plays to Brady in that first game, several to Gronkowski, and of course gave up way too many. If they did anything maybe in that first game, and I'll have to go back and check the numbers, is maybe they tackled the catch a little bit better in that game, and they obviously didn't do that in the rematch in the AFC Championship game. Let's face it, if you're going to beat Brady anytime soon, they're going to have to do so with pressuring the quarterback. I don't care what coverages you run, you have to get in his face and knock him around and knock him off his spot and make him get rid of the football quickly and then tackle the catch. So I'll have to go back and see if I can point out any more differences between the first and second game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Look, the difference is, I mean, the Patriots run game was ineffective in the second game largely, as you pointed out. But they were able to do what they wanted through the air and in a bunch of big games. Our buddy Stu emails from New Zealand, and I think maybe we had incorrectly identified him as being from Australia.
Well, there's only two of us.
There's only two of us. So he's not an Aussie. He's a Kiwi. Stu, we're very aware. Just tell us, North or South Island? Are you from Auckland? Are you from Christchurch? Where are you from, buddy? But we appreciate you listening. And, you know, Dave and I are blown away every once in a while when we sit back and kind of take inventory of not only how big our listenership is, but how crazy it is from all over the world, you know, all over the British Isles for sure. That's our most common out of the U.S. Destination for listeners. But, you know, we've got a bunch in Europe, in Germany, various places in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, up in Ireland, Mexico, and Canada. So anybody that we didn't mention and you want to chime in if you haven't previously, we've got a map with dots where our listeners are located. So it's always fun for us to take a look. And so, Stu, thanks again, and we'll make sure we know the haka next time you write in. We're ready for the rugby team and everything else that is Kiwi.
Why is New Zealand close to New England? I'm still trying to find it on the map, but
you just keep going right through, bore a hole. You'll get there eventually.
I got you. I've got one from Jeff Craig here regarding Ben's comments concerning his retirement. He wants to know, is it possible that Ben is considering retirement because he feels his play is below the line? He says, face it, played bad on the road and even had some clunkers at home. Look, there's no doubt Ben had some clunkers on the road. And I think, you know, we even wrote about it, and there was a Pro Football Focus tweet about the difference in the passer ratings between Ben.
We talked about it on my show yesterday at length, you and I.
Right. What a difference it is from 2014 to 2016. And as I told you, I think in your interview, I even drilled that down a little bit further by using average net yards per passing attempt. And oh boy, the difference there. I mean, a 2 point something difference between Ben's road and home passing performances. Now, of course, that takes in sacks into account as well too. But I really like to use that as a measuring stick. And nobody, I think Aaron Rodgers was the closest in differential at like 1.4, 1.5, or something along those lines. No, I don't think Ben is. I don't think Ben may or may not be considering retirement because of how he feels he's played. I think, quite honestly, I just think this has been being Ben, and Ben being a bit of a drama queen, even though he would probably take offense to that statement there. I just think he's frustrated coming off of a loss there. And David and I talked the other day about he's obviously probably mad at something, whether it be Todd Haley or the way Mike Tomlin is running this team, maybe as it relates to young players. I think the last thing on Ben's list is saying, man, maybe I'm losing it a little bit. I think that's the last thing on his list.
And also, you know, Dave, we talk about this, and our buddy Ed in Athelton sent us an email, and he's a football coach, and he talks about the need to get pressure on the quarterback, and let me just put it out there for you. With the Steelers or almost any team, if you had a choice today to have whether it be in the draft or free agency, and you knew the guy was going to perform well, you could have a dominant edge rusher, a Von Miller, a Khalil Mack type player, or a dominant corner. You know, pick whoever you like as your best dominant corner in today's game. If you can have that to kind of build your defense around, which one are you taking?
I'm taking a guy that can get out to the quarterback, right?
Yeah, of course, right?
I mean,
I was wondering what happened there if you got stuck for a second.
Yeah, you caused me to think a little bit, use my brain. But Bill, I always go back to what Bill Parcells said several years ago when talking about top draft picks and first rounders. You always get a guy that can either get after a quarterback, you get a guy who can protect you from the guy that can get after the quarterback, or you get a quarterback. So that's where I am, David. Look, I think the Steelers team, God bless James Harrison, and hopefully he will be back in 2017 because the Steelers could use him. But I think the secondary, I think weaknesses in a secondary can be easily masked if you have guys that can get after the quarterback, and I'll stand by that. Sure, shut down cornerbacks are nice, but unless you're playing a lot of cover one, a lot of man to man, there's still going to be times where they're going to be asked to do their job playing some cover two or some cover one. And, just give me a guy that can get out to the quarterback. And that's why I would hope the Steelers draft about seven or eight edge rushers in this upcoming draft.
And Dave, I agree. And we got our buddy Pierre from San Antonio. We got 1,000 other emails to get to. Unfortunately, I'm a little pressed for time today. And we got Alex Kirby coming up to talk about Belichick and the Patriots. So, Dave, anything before we get to Alex?
Yeah, I'll try to find where what country San Antonio is in the meantime. But we'll try to get to a few more of these questions, as David said, in future podcasts. We got a ton on. We certainly do appreciate it. So let's hear what Alex had to say about Steelers-Patriots.
Welcome back. And as we're wrapping up the 2016 Steelers season, obviously things, as we've been discussing, moving toward what the Steelers will do in free agency, as they, get their contracts signed with some of their exclusive rights free agents, look forward to the bigger pool. And then obviously we'll be beginning our draft coverage, East-West Shrine Game last weekend, Senior Bowl this weekend, lots of stuff going on from here to there. And we're still 3 months away from the draft, which is about the entirety of the NFL season. But a lot of different things we're going to be getting into in the offseason. And with the Patriots game, the beating the Steelers took fresh in our minds, we're pleased to be joined by Alex Kirby, and you can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex J. Kirby. He's the author of The Big Book of Belichick, His Thoughts on Strategy, Fundamentals, and History. This book was just published about 2 months ago. And, Alex, we're thrilled to have you, man. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Alex, let's just get, you know, I always like to start authors with the genesis of the book and your kind of background and interest in football, which led you to this, because obviously a lot has been written about Bill Belichick over the years in terms of, you know, the son of a coach, you know, his involvement through the Naval Academy and all the way up through Cleveland and the Patriots. What got you involved?
Well, as far as the book goes, I mean, listen, I admire Belichick like I'm sure a lot of people in football do. I mean, his record speaks for itself. And something always confused me, you know, whenever people talk about Belichick, you know, there's kind of the something that people talk about over and over again, which is, you know, Belichick doesn't give answers. He's tight-lipped about everything. He doesn't give any answers. Well, that's just not true. I mean, you go to any interview and you'll see that that's not true. You ask him, you know, you ask him what play he's going to run on Sunday, he's not going to give you an answer. But if you ask him a good football question, I mean, he's a football guy. He likes to talk about the history of the game, strategy, fundamentals, maybe not what they're going to run, you know, in that next game, or he's not going to pull out the playbook and give you the finer details of that, but he'll talk about all sorts of things. I mean, I was surprised, maybe not surprised, but I was a little bit blown away by how much he likes to talk about special teams when I went through this sort of thing. So he'll talk your ear off about football as long as it's not what they're going to be doing in the game plan that next week.
Yeah, Alex, I'm with you. One of the things that I enjoy every week, it's one of my favorite things to look at on the internet, is Bill Belichick on the whiteboard. And he does a segment with one of the ex-quarterbacks of the Patriots where he does 5 to 7 minutes looking at three or four different plays and, you know, draws up exactly what happened, how the play was designed, why it was designed that way. I mean, that's not something you'll see many coaches do. I don't think I've ever seen Mike Tomlin ever in front of a whiteboard or a video telestrator for public consumption looking at a play. And Bill does it every week.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the great things about Belichick and his relationship with the organization that he's been a part of for so long. You know, he's really a company guy. Him and Robert Kraft has such a good relationship, and you know, the organization works so well together that they obviously came to him with this idea and said, hey, this would be a great way to, you know, kind of build the brand and connect with the fans. And so, you know, from what I understand, he's really into it, and he obviously does a great job. So I think it would be something that other teams could emulate for sure.
Alex, when you look back at what happened in the AFC Championship game between the Steelers and the Patriots, I mean, you obviously the best thing about, you know, following you on Twitter is immediately you're able to kind of decipher what they ran, you know, if they've ran it in the past and that kind of thing. They used some four wide receiver sets on Sunday against the Steelers, and that evidently is something they didn't do a lot of, throughout the regular season. Was there anything else that the Patriots did, you know, personnel scheme wise that really kind of surprised you?
Well, you know, from a personnel standpoint, I wouldn't say that the four wide receiver thing surprised me that much, just because of who they lost at the tight end position, you know, midway through the season. You know, obviously Gronkowski was such a huge part of that offense, and he's one of those guys, you know, they'll move running backs and fullbacks and tight ends all over the field and all over the formation. And so when you lose a guy like that who's just put up so many numbers throughout the years, you're going to have to put somebody else in that spot who can catch the ball. And so you're going to have to do more four wide receiver sets and try to spread them out. And also the other thing is, you know, you're probably going to see more fullback sets on the field with the James Devlin and regular personnel, even next week in the Super Bowl. So I think, there's certain things, and you never know what these guys are going to come out with for sure, but there are definitely certain principles they like to, you know, they like to repeat over and over again, which is using those guys all over the field, put them in motion, try to use them to identify the coverage and put Brady in a good position.
When you look at what the Steelers did, they mostly ran a lot of zone and some spot drops, and boy, that was a mess doing it so much. Now, obviously, when you look at Brady this past year, he's not a guy that you probably want to blitz a lot either, and the Steelers did blitz him, I think, something to the tune of like 8 or 9 times on Sunday. I think only 2 or 3 times in the first half. I guess what I'm trying to get at is what should the Steelers have done more of? Should they have played more cover one? tried to at least play a little bit more man? I mean, were they just sitting ducks with not being able to get pressure with that zone?
Well, you know, I think you, when you're talking about playing zone and you're talking about playing man, I think the bigger issue that you're dealing with is that the Patriots are just so good at whatever play it is, whatever you got called, the Patriots are just so good at figuring out what it is before the snap. So whether you're going to play man or zone, you know, different teams do different things very well, and the Steelers can play both. But whatever you're doing, you've got to find a way to make Brady unsure of what you're bringing at him. I mean, that's the bigger question. I mean, you can rush as many people as you want. You can drop back as many people as you want into coverage. But if he knows where he's going with the ball before the snap, which is a lot of the time, then it doesn't matter because he's going to get rid of the football right away, and there's nothing you can do about it. He's one of the most accurate guys maybe ever as far as putting the football where it's supposed to be. So that's really tough to beat if you're just relying on playing to man or straight zone. You've got to find ways to – you know, like we said, like we talked about earlier, there's a reason the Patriots love to put so many tight ends and so many running backs to move them all around. It's because, you know, a way to get the coverage to, it's a way to get the defense to show their hand, basically, is to figure out what they're playing. And so once Brady knows that, you know, it's game over. You know, at that point, it's just a matter of whether the receiver is going to catch it. So, you know, the Patriots might have a couple drops now and then, but that's really the bottom line is if you can force him to hesitate. You know, there's not much he hasn't seen before, but maybe you show him one thing before the snap and then go to something else afterwards and give your defensive line time to at least get their hands up and knock the ball down. It's those sort of things. And then just making tackles, you know, not allowing yards after the catch. So it's those sort of, you know, disguised parts of the defense that really will make the difference.
So, you know, when we think about this, and Alex, when, you know, Ryan Shazier was on television this morning talking about the Patriots and their offense, and he said, you know, basically they can be a completely different team week to week. This is not news. I mean, we've all heard this. And you, in your conversation there, the answer to that question, talked a lot about Tom Brady. I have had Michael Hawley on my show, who wrote the book about Belichick and Brady and their interaction. If Bill Belichick had Tyrod Taylor as his QB, where would the Patriots be, and if you were to hazard a guess?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I would say that no matter who Belichick has, and I think you've seen this on all different, you know, phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams, he would find a way to build his game plan around who he has. I mean, I don't want to necessarily compare Jacoby Brissett to Tyrod Taylor. I think that's kind of a lazy comparison, but I'm going to do it anyway, just as far as the mobile quarterback aspect of it. I mean, you saw what he was able to do just the week of. I mean, they told at least he told the media, you know, he put those couple, that special package in for Jacoby Brissett on a short week for a Thursday night game. He put in a couple plays that were ultimately the difference. Now, that defense of the Patriots won them that game, you know, and I think it was the third week of the season without Brady. But I think at the end of the day, Belichick will find a way to win with what you give him. And I think Tyrod Taylor's a much better quarterback than people give him credit for. But still, I think they would find a way to use what they have. Now, that might not be what they're doing now. I don't think, as far as ball placement, maybe Tyrod is not as good as Tom Brady. But they're going to find a way to make it easier on their guys and find a way to help them do what they do best. I think that's the bottom line. So what that ultimately would look like as far as X's and O's, I'm not sure. Whether it would look like what they were doing in Buffalo last year, I don't know. But I will tell you this. It would not look he would not force his players to get to fit his scheme. It would be the other way around.
Right. And so that begs the larger question of – you know, you get players that you ideally you're drafting players that fit what you want to do, but ultimately you've got a roster full of guys and you've got to play to their strengths. What do you think if it's, you know, something that can be articulated in a couple sentences? You know, everybody would like to be multiple in a lot of facets. And I hear Mike Tomlin use the word multiple all the time when talking about his offense, but he rarely uses the word multiple in his defense. You know, you want to have guys do different things, be able to, you know, play the run, be able to drop into coverage when you're talking about your linebackers, do some different things as corners, et cetera. Why has it been so difficult for anybody else to replicate what Belichick does? Because, you know, you look again, as somebody said this morning, His athletes aren't going to win the combine. I mean, you know, they're not necessarily the most talented and physically gifted guys, but they're obviously on detail. They're on point. They know their responsibilities. We've all heard do your job a bazillion times now. Is there something larger that you can see that sets what they're doing apart?
Well, I mean, first of all, and once again, I hate to go the lazy route, but they do have who I think is the greatest quarterback in NFL history. So that by itself is a huge advantage. But all that being said, as far as the multiplicity of the offense, I mean, you hear Belichick talk about the tight end position a whole lot. And the reason for that is, you know, those guys, if you've got a Gronkowski, if you've got a Martellus Bennett, those guys can do a lot. You know, what you can line them up everywhere. You can have them catch passes. You can have them block. I mean, you'll see that also with Julian Edelman. You know, in a lot of formations that the Patriots run, he is basically an H-back. You know, he'll split tight to off the tight end or offensive tackle, and he'll block down on a linebacker or defensive end and create some space for the run game. So you want to find those guys who, when they come on the field as a defensive coordinator, or maybe as an offensive coordinator, if you're calling the offense, you want to find those guys when you bring them onto the field. That other guy, you know, if you bring on three tight ends, you could line up an empty. You know what I mean? And actually, that might be a good time to segue into the Super Bowl, because honestly, I think Atlanta does that almost as well as the Patriots do. You see a lot of the same ideas put into Atlanta's offense with a really good quarterback, and I think that's the reason they've been successful this year.
When you go back, and I know you've already probably broken down the Texans game against the Patriots, the Texans had some, I guess, success, you would call it, on the defensive side of the football, but even so, Brady still found his way through that. What is what the Texans did, was it better disguise? Was it more man? What did you see out of the Texans defensively that, you know, seemed to increase their chances at getting at Tom Brady?
Well, I think, first of all, you're dealing with a staff in Houston who knows Tom Brady very well. Obviously, Bill O'Brien and Romeo Crennel, those guys have spent a lot of time around the Patriots organization. They know Tom Brady very well. And they've also, you know, they've just got a lot of really good players on defense. They've got a heck of a pass rush, you know, with Jadeveon Clowney by himself. And, you know, we'll see what happens with J.J. Watt and if they want to keep him or trade him. You know, I've heard all kinds of things. But they've got defense starts with the pass rush in the NFL. You know, if you can rush the passer, that covers up a lot of holes in the secondary. And from a schematic point of view, the Patriots honestly were kind of predictable in that game. They especially when it came to involving Michael Floyd in the game plan, they had brought him on late in the year. And I think they were kind of working hard to involve him in certain personnel packages. And I think that's why you saw him be inactive for the AFC Championship. Belichick probably said, you know, listen, we're not gonna kill ourselves in the postseason to make sure this guy works. You know, if he can find a way to work himself in, that's great. But we're gonna do what we do. We've done fine without Michael Floyd all year, and so I think that was another part of it. I think they kind of hamstrung themselves in that department.
When you look at what the Patriots, flipping over to the other side of the football, when the Patriots defense defending the Steelers offense. Le'Veon Bell going out certainly didn't hurt their feelings. But when it came to passing the football, we saw Ben go deep on a third and short early that Sammy Coates wasn't able to haul in. But you know, for the most part, what did Antonio Brown have? Like 7 for 70 in that game. It looked like they used some cone brackets and you know, things along that nature to try to defend and take away Antonio Brown. Is that kind of what you saw? Did they indeed, in fact, force Ben Roethlisberger to go other directions?
Well, yeah, I think so. And that's one thing, you know, you hear it all the time. That's what Belichick does best. He takes away what you do best, and he forces you to play left-handed, basically. You know, from what I saw, you know, and again, I just went through the All-22 for that game yesterday. To be honest, I'd been spending the past week looking at the Falcons offense in preparation for the Super Bowl. But yesterday, from what I saw, you know, the Patriots really took away the easy underneath throws. And I mean, like you said, the drop by Coates early on in the game really hurt the momentum. And it kind of, I don't know, obviously Le'Veon Bell leaving the game hurt as well. But, you know, the Steelers have been really good this year about getting guys free underneath on those shallow crossing routes. especially on third down. And the Patriots really took that away, or at the very least, you know, they didn't make it easy on him. So Ben has to decide, am I going to take the high percentage throw and get him immediately tackled short of the first down marker, or am I going to take a shot? And at a couple places, he took a shot, and it didn't always work out. So that's what Belichick does best. And, you know, he kept it simple as far as, you know, zone coverage. They weren't doing anything they haven't done all year, but they'll do it better than you will do what you do.
Because Le'Veon Bell's such a patient runner, and I think we saw some of this in the mic'd up stuff after the game as well too. Well, was that front? It looked to me, it looked like a two gap, and they just were wanting their defensive linemen to be very patient along with Bell. And then, you know, as soon as Bell left the game, you had Belichick going over to his defensive players and saying, look, now you guys have to get off these blocks because we're dealing with a much different runner there. Even if Bell would have stayed healthy, would it have made much difference the way the Patriots jumped on the scoreboard there?
Well, you know, I never want to say that it wouldn't have made a difference because, you know, football games, especially in the first and second quarter in the NFL, there's such a butterfly effect about how you play early on versus how you play later on. There's so many cause and effect things that you never know exactly how a game is going to turn out if a big time player like that goes down. I think it could have been a much closer game. Yeah. Because if you take away the Patriots' ability to drop defensive linemen back in coverage on third and medium instead of handing it off to Bell, if you take away that uncertainty like Bell's injury did, I think that's a totally different game plan. And you're right. You know, you mentioned Belichick going over to his guys on the sideline saying, hey, listen, this is a totally different ball game now. We gotta really go after the runner. And in a way, it's almost like playing contain against a mobile quarterback. You just got to be patient because if you're not, you know, he'll take advantage of you. And so the Patriots defense has not, you know, they've been solid for the most part, but they haven't been perfect against the run this year. They've had some issues, and I think that's why you saw the Jamie Collins trade earlier. Belichick wasn't liking what he was seeing, and so they've improved a little bit. But, yeah, I think anytime you have a running back of that caliber, you know, he is a difference maker, and I think it would have been a much different game if they would have had to continue to defend like that all night.
Outside of catching the football, what would you have liked to have seen the Steelers' offense do more of?
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. As far as scheme-wise, I think they came in with a sound plan. You know, players, you know, you're going to lose guys like Le'Veon Bell, unfortunately. That's just the nature of the game. You know, like I said, if he's in the game, it's totally different. But still, you know, when you have an open pass thrown at you behind the secondary in New England, you got to make that catch. So, you know, I think the Steelers had plenty of chances to keep it close, and who knows what happens in the fourth quarter. We've seen New England lose at home in the playoffs a few times, so it's not impossible that the Steelers would have made a couple plays late, but you just never know. I mean, you just got to make the plays when they come to you, and New England did, and Pittsburgh didn't, unfortunately for them.
We look at what's going on down in Houston, and it feels like a game that, you know, look, the Patriots offense, number one in the league in points allowed, and they've obviously, you know, continued to be successful in their two playoff games in terms of what they've given up. The Falcons feel like it looks like they can score 35 kind of without blinking. Do you expect this game to be, you know, the total to be in the 60s or less so?
You know, I will say this. I think this is probably, I mean, I think it goes without saying that this is the best offense New England has played against all year with Atlanta. And the hype is real. This is not a team that got hot all of a sudden and just kind of went on a tear. This is a very good football team and a very good offense with Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan calling the plays, and they're very disciplined, and they're not doing anything that's unsound, and they have a great game plan. And they're like I said earlier, they're a lot like the Patriots. They will switch up what they're going to bring at you week to week, depending on what you're going to play against them. So they're a very well-coached football team, and I think New England, you know, they've got a real challenge on your hands, and I'm sure Belichick would say that about anybody he'd be playing. But, you know, this team is for real, and the Falcons have a very good chance of winning this game.
Dave, anything else you want to wrap up with?
Super Bowl thoughts in general, where you're at right now as far as previewing the game and who wins it and why.
You know, I'm never going to bet against Bill Belichick. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, he's certainly come into the Super Bowl and lost before, but I'm going to play the percentages on this one and say Belichick wins. That being said, it would not surprise me if Atlanta won, but if in big games, I'm going with Brady and Belichick. They've been there before. They've got Both coordinators have been there before. A lot of the players have been there before. I mean, I just think the experience and, you know, the big game experience is going to end up siding with New England here.
And I guess one final question from me. I mean, you do all these play-by-play breakdowns in these books of yours. And for those that don't know, you can look at Alex's books on Amazon. And we highly think you should do that and purchase a few. Any chance that you do anything Steelers-related with either offense or defense with these play breakdowns?
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that because I'm actually going to be doing starting with the Super Bowl and national championship game, you know, that we had with Alabama and Clemson. I'm actually going to be starting doing one of these a month now. So, you know, once the Super Bowl is over, I'm going to get started working on that. And actually, that was one of the ones I did a couple of years ago was the last Patriots and Seahawks game. But, you know, the Steelers team fascinates me, obviously, because they've got a very talented quarterback and they do a good job of those guys do a very good job of using their personnel. So I could see that. You know, I don't have a schedule necessarily of who I'm going to do after the first few games, but I could definitely see doing a Steelers book.
All right, great.
Hey, Alex, we really appreciate your time. And for those, it's on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, the most recent book, the one we've been discussing, the big book of Belichick, his thoughts on strategy, fundamentals, and history. There's a book on Saban, the Auburn offense. As Alex mentioned, the Super Bowl between New England and Seattle. So there are a bunch of things there that you can check out.
And it's alexkirbyfootball.com if you want to just – it'll take you right there to the list of my books on Amazon.
Great. And you can follow Alex on Twitter at AlexJKirby. Alex, really appreciate you being with us here on the Terrible Cup podcast. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Dave, good stuff there from Alex. And, you know, as we mentioned, you can find his stuff on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. He's written about a variety of other things. If you're tired of Bill Belichick and the Patriots, he's got a book on Nick Saban. You know, you heard the other stuff, the Super Bowl stuff. But anyway, check all his stuff out. That is going to kind of push us toward the hour mark again. We're not having any trouble filling up the time these days.
No, and I doubt we will next week either. We'll get into maybe some salary cap talk, some more talk about maybe some of the unrestricted free agents of the Steelers and move forward. And we'll get further away from talking about people probably tired of having this salt poured in their womb talking about Steelers-Patriots. But we are required to do so not even 1 week away from that game ending. And give our boy Craig another shout-out.
Hey, folks, you know the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than getting a home. Than getting through the Patriots' defense at the goal line. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in New England. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig Oxane a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 25151, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
All right.
Dave? Yeah, that does it for it.
Yeah, I think that does. We filled up another hour here. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, you want to support the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, find that donate button up top and hit it and take you to PayPal. We appreciate everybody that supported the show. As David mentioned at the top, our listenership has really exploded again this year. We certainly do appreciate it. Keep the emails coming as well, too. We might not read all of them on the air, but we try to read all of them, period. And you can do so at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com.
As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.